to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. Well, I'm really thrilled. I have a guest that was with me a long time ago on another topic and has resurfaced as coming back to Darby and Friends as a friend because she has written a book, almost a biography, a memoir, and it is so poignant. It just, I found it heartbreaking in many places. So to reintroduce you to my friend, this is Patricia Burns, known as Trish, and that's the name of her book, Trish, A Story of Survival and Recovery. So welcome, Trish.
Thank you, Darby.
I'm so pleased that you're here with me today. You have received some very, very high praise, and I'll just briefly mention one of the individuals. It's from Sam Deibler, who was the Director of Commission on Aging, and I quote him, "But Trisha's story does not end there. The real story is how she moved through the challenges and built a sparkling character and became a supportive mother, caring confidant to imprisoned women and 12-step program member, and a business success with a religious faith that even angry nuns couldn't ultimately shake." What a lovely praise from a man like Sam Deibler. That's big stuff.
It certainly is. I know Sam and Ann for many years, and he was one person I wanted to make sure I did have a review. It touched me to hear what to read what he did say. It was very, very...
Yes. Tell our audience what prompted you to write this book, because it's, one, very personal, and two, extremely revealing to a lot of pain and suffering.
Yes. Well, I can't say that in six words or less, because it's, first of all, Darby, it took me 11 years to write the book.
Wow.
And for obvious reasons, there's a lot of pain involved, and revisiting that pain was not comfortable. So I had to do it at times when I was ready for it.
Right.
But I think I always thought I would write a book from the time I was, well, I'd say from my adulthood. And when I would review some of the experiences that I have had, I often said, you know, I've also learned in my 12-step recovery that revelation or revealing your life is so cathartic, and it lessens, you know, it's what I've learned is instead of keeping everything in my head and heart, by sharing it with the rest of the world, not only does it reduce that heaviness, but I feel somewhere along the line I can help others too.
Right. Did you find that once you started to relieve yourself of, you had dropped the book off and I thought, well, I'll take a couple of days to read it. And literally, in one day, I couldn't get up. I just kept turning the page saying, oh, no more can happen to this poor woman. No more, no more. And then I'd turn to the next chapter and it would be, again, something. So... Yeah. You know, one might even say your worst nightmare was happening, but it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you find that when you mentioned the word cathartic, that you could move from letting it go to a path of forgiveness to these people?
Well, the most important figure of forgiveness was my grandfather, obviously,
right.
But... you know, I was watching something on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw it Sunday about the people from the Holocaust who were pre-recording their lives. And one woman talked about forgiving the Nazis for what they did. And one man said he'd never forgive them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, forgiveness is a very personal thing.
Right.
If I want to live a life of peace and serenity and freedom, I have to forgive.
Right.
Now, forgiving someone, especially for what my grandfather did, was not about him, really. It was about me and letting go of what I carried in my heart. Because I never discussed the sexual abuse until I was 50 years old.
Right.
Not even with my former husband. And, excuse me. I hated him for what he did, but what happened with me over the period of time of preparation to forgive,
right,
more and more did I feel a lightening and a freedom from the bondage of the hatred. I don't hate him anymore. I don't like what he did. I hate what he did, but I have forgiven him to the best of my ability because, in my opinion, I have to. To live a life of freedom.
Right. Yes, I would agree with you. The Meaning of Life by Viktor Frankl, he talks a lot about you remain the prisoner if you continue to hate.
That's one of my all-time favorite books.
Oh, and, isn't it? It's mine, too. Yeah.
Yes.
It goes very deep into what each of us has different experiences, but some of the emotions scar us in a similar way, even though perhaps the act put against us was different.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I've learned a lot from people like Frankl and others who've been through horrendous experiences and how that woman who stood there when I was watching that program on 60 Minutes, how she stood there with a paper in her hand and said, I forgive all you for what you've done. I mean, that's pretty amazing as far as I'm concerned, but I can see why she did it.
Right.
And, you know, on the other hand, I can also see why the gentleman who refuses to forgive won't forgive. I mean, I can see it, but it doesn't necessarily rest in my heart.
Right.
The freedom of forgiveness gives you.
What about your experiences with betrayal? Do you think that through your life you have become more suspicious of people? Are you more cynical about life? Are you less open-minded because of the betrayals you've experienced?
Now, that's an interesting question, Darby, because I had a chat with my older son who happens to live nearby. You know, I am probably one of the most forgiving and accepting people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Right.
One of the things I live by is acceptance. And I know my mother helped introduce me to that concept because the way she forgave her sister and she accepted everybody for whoever and whatever they were. She never really judged anybody. The only problem is don't cross her because she'd just as quickly pick her shoe up and hit you over the head with it. But the truth is, I've learned to be more open and accepting of everybody and everything. And never to, you know, I used to think, oh my gosh, that person's so quiet and so shy. But you know, behind that, I've learned that behind the shyness could be a very unhappy or very sad or maybe just a very quiet person. And I really try not to judge anybody. I mean, that's something that I really do work on, partly because of my 12-step experience. That's what I'm called to do, is to accept everything as it is, as it should be. And it's all part of God's plan. It's not my plan. It's my higher power's plan.
Yeah.
But I would say that, no, I'm not a realistic, yes. But I'm not, oh, there's my phone. I'm sorry. I hope that doesn't, what I'm trying to say is that I have not become a suspicious, doubtful person. It's amazing. I find my, to be honest with you, I find the woman I've become kind of surprises me and amazes me, too.
Oh, that's wonderful. You mention another relative of yours, Claire.
Yes.
And this is a quote. Anger can be insidious, especially when it becomes internalized as shame and self-blame.
Yes.
And you go on later to talk about her addiction and her life and the really great tragedy that ensued because of internalized shame and self-blame, when in fact it had absolutely nothing to do with her.
No, no, not at all. I mean, she was someone who was thrown into the, how should I say, her circumstances were not of her doing. I mean,
right.
She was an African-American little girl, and she was asked to hide when people came by, and she was treated with shame and degradation. And, of course, all of that was, you know, to her was normal.
Right.
Until she realized, as I say in the book, when she took that trip to Newport News, Virginia, and she realized she was treated as a colored person.
Right.
And when she was living here in Manhattan, even though we had our, you know, black and white differences, they were benign compared to what she had to go through when she went down south.
Right. So it seems even you had horrific experiences, and it's almost as if you were living in the center of a tornado of many different people that were experiencing horrific things, that there was no particular blame that the person had done anything, but
mm-hmm.
life, as you said, unfolded, and this was the journey you were given. And suddenly
right.
you find yourself dealing with not only your own, to use kind of a 21st century, your own stuff, but you're also being affected by everyone in your family's stuff.
Absolutely.
I thought it was quite tragic that your cousin ended up becoming heroin addicted. It's sort
yes.
of like one of those classic stories, and
mm-hmm.
that...
Yeah.
in and of itself was a great tragedy, which is just ancillary to the story of Trish. On a lighter
yes.
note, something I absolutely loved was how you got the nickname of Trish the Dish.
Yes.
I just
yes.
thought that was so cute. I absolutely loved it. I
well,
see that it's time for me to take a quick commercial break, and then we can come back after that break, and I have something I think is important to reveal, but it won't do anything but enhance your interest in reading the story, my friends out there in Radio Land. So you're listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere. And 105.5 FM. I'll be right back with Patricia Burns. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com. Anywhere. Today we have Trish Burns with us, who is talking about her new book. It's called Trish, A Story of Survival and Recovery. And Trish, you were just getting ready to tell us how you got the nickname Trish the Dish.
Yes. Well, as I think I recorded in the book, that my late fiancé, and he belonged to a country club in Greenwich that... had a list of all the members, and one of the members was George C. Scott, the actor.
Yes, of course.
I'm a little older than a lot of the population, but some people may not remember George Scott. But the list included his wife, Trish Vanderveen. She's also an actress. And I looked at the name, and I said to Neil, I said, you know what? I like that name, Trish, because her name is really Patricia. So he said to me, do you like that name? I said, yeah, I do. I like that, Trish. He said, okay, honey. He said, well, from now on, I'm going to call you Trish, the Dish. Okay. So it was interesting how, and he kept, that was not too long before he died, so he didn't get to call me that too many times before that. But It's one of those interesting things that meant a lot to me, you know.
Yes. Well, that was an affirmation, certainly.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it comes in handy as a password, too.
Yes, yes. And that's a very interesting play against, I'll read another quote from your book. My father was brought up an uptight Irish Catholic. Mother straight from the old country. He lived by an antiquated mores and attitudes of culture, who thought girls were weaker, not as smart, and just all round worthless than the male sex. And you never had a brother, did you?
I did.
Oh, your youngest sibling was a brother.
Yeah, when I was 12, he was born.
Right. You had a sister you were very close to, Barbara.
Barbara, yeah. We were only 13 months apart.
Right.
And then my third sibling, Margaret, she's 9 years younger than I am.
Right.
So, but by the time my brother came along, it was a whole different dynamics with my parents.
Right. And that was Patrick. So now the thing that I was the big surprise of the show is that all of this turmoil, and literally I've only given you the tiniest tip of the iceberg of all the different adventures of Trish, is the fact that, well, I'm going to let you tell what is so unique about your family.
You're talking about my whole family.
Well, you have your name on the cover of the book, and what's under your name?
Oh, the sign language, yes.
Yes.
Yes, my parents. Well, you know, Darby, it's so different back then. My parents were deaf, and we spoke sign language.
Right. And I think that's extraordinary.
Yeah, well, I still think in sign language sometimes.
Do you really?
Yes. I wish I had more people to talk to in sign language. There aren't too many people handy that I can do that with. But it was an extraordinary experience. At the same time, it separated me from the rest of the population because, as I say in my book, deaf people were kind of shunned, kind of. I shouldn't say they were definitely shunned. And as I also said, you would think it was a communicable disease because they would just shy away from you. And people made fun of deaf people. People underpaid them, treated them poorly on jobs. You know, that's something
that happened to your father.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't get away with Joe Burns because he put his fist in your face first. My dad was a little bit of a pugilistic guy. I mean, he felt that's the one thing he had going for him. He was strong, and he didn't let anybody get away with anything, you know. And he'd punch you in the nose before you could say something twice to him. You got the message right away with him.
But didn't he also, when he was working, he was extremely strong, and so he was kept on for a particular job because he was the one who could do it the best and not have any distractions because he couldn't hear.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
It's amazing.
He was, you know, as I said, the thing that made them extraordinary, and not just him but a lot of deaf people, is they don't hear anything that's going on. They don't talk and chit-chat while they're working.
Right.
My father was a very focused, strong worker, and so his production was excellent.
Right.
You know, better than most.
Now, you also experienced multiple marriages and motherhood, and also over...
Well, I wouldn't exactly say multiple, because I didn't marry Neil because we were going to get married, but then he died.
Oh, but, I thought you had married him. Okay, I missed that.
No. I had to marry the young man when I got pregnant, and then I married my ex-husband. But Neil was not, we never quite got there. We were enjoying being happy and single.
But it seems like from reading the book, you had your nicest relationship with him.
Oh, I did. Absolutely.
That's ironic, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because he made up, those 10 years with him made up for all the years that I was lacking in anything else with relationships, because it happened at a time of my life. I was only 30, and I was beginning to mature in a way that even I didn't fully understand. Mm-hmm. And we kind of had this yin and yang relationship. You know, I was more thoughtful and introspective, and he was more businesslike and practical and stuff. And we kind of balanced each other out.
Isn't that lovely? And
the profound love we had for each other was what really I remember the most and miss the most.
You had a career starting out with your secretarial aspirations.
Yes.
That seemed to take a lot of grit to get yourself to do that, and how all that moved along.
Oh, yes. Well, having never finished high school, but having started I was one of the, I say in there, one of these kids that thought being a secretary was a glamorous job, mm-hmm. and it fit my caretaking personality.
Right.
But it's, I did quit school when I was 16, and, because I wanted to get a job to help my mother and my siblings out, because by then, Mom and Dad had split up. But I,
And there goes that cycle of betrayal.
Yeah. And I would, study shorthand, because I only got like a year of shorthand before I quit school. And back then, the shorthand that I was learning was much more complicated than the Gregg method, which is the most current. They don't even use it anymore. But the point is, I was determined. I would listen to the radio and ride the train and read a book and try to write everything in shorthand. And
you're a very determined person.
I think so. Yes, I truly believe I am. And it comes from all the, I believe, Darby, that so many of the negative things that contributed to my life as a child and as a young woman created this woman in the future who knew how to take the next right step. Does that make sense to you? It was important for me to always do the right thing. And, my sister Barbara used to tease me, "Oh, you're such a goody two-shoes." And I realized, yes, I was as a kid, because I had to be. I was a parentified child, and I was expected to be a good and to take care of everybody. And because of that lack, I never had a childhood because of that.
Right.
Because of the training that I received in being a caretaker and a caregiver, it helped me later in my life as an adult. So everything has a way.
Do you think that's what gave you your strength to keep going?
Yes, and I think having two parents, as limited as they were, because my dad, in spite of being deaf, was a very smart guy. My mother was intelligent in her own way. She was very ESP-ish, more of a sensitive, feeling, seeing kind of person. She could see through people. My dad was more of a realist and a little bit of an Archie Bunker type, too, which I'm not proud of, but it is what it was. I can't change that. But I believe living the lives that they did was a good example to me of just plugging in and moving on and just going forward.
Right. Now, your first child is mm-hmm. Zach. And
yes.
That was because your dad made it clear to Bert that he was going to marry you.
Oh, yes. He had no intention of marrying me, and his parents didn't want him to marry me either. Although I think they all wanted, what my dad wanted was to give my child up, but I was not going to do that.
Right. Which, is to go against some norms of the time. An unwed mm-hmm. mother is, especially then, it doesn't matter now. We're in the 21st century, nothing matters, but it's really just, and then you have your next husband, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
And that had to be a challenge. I mean, to go from a great high of feeling you're suddenly given all the love and support for another betrayal.
Yes.
Oh, that's my music, which means, my dear Trish, we're done. So everybody, read the book, Trish, A Story of Survival and Recovery. Trish, how do we buy it on Amazon?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. It's a great read. I highly endorse it. Thank you so much, Trish Burns, for being on Darby and Friends. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH, 105.5 FM, and WGCH.com, anywhere.